we present the News Quiz with your host, Susan Kalman.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a correction from Veja magazine in Brazil, read by Susan Ray.
We would like to clarify that the politician Eduardo Jorge likes to spend his free time reading Tolstoy, not Toy Story, as was originally reported.
Our thanks to Dorothy Rank for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right Hugo Rifkin and comedian Jade Adams. And opposite them on my left, comedian Jen Brister and Mark Steele. Hugo, which MPs are openly revolting?
Oh, well, all of them. But I think you probably mean... Right, so there's this group in the Conservative Party called the ERG, the European Research Group, and they're like the hard Brexiters. They're ruled by Jacob Rees-Mogg, which is like a terrifying vision of the future for us all. And this week they had a big meeting on how they might get rid of the Prime Minister, get rid of Theresa May and replace her. This was first revealed by Robert Peston of The Other Place. And he tweeted, 50-odd MPs were at this meeting. And I thought it's typical MSM bias, not even mention the ones who aren't odd. But then I thought there probably weren't any who weren't odd. So that was probably why. But there was this meeting with all the MPs, and they were there making statements such as, you know, sort of thinly veiled criticisms like, she has to go, and she's a disaster, and this can't go on, and oh my God, I want to kill myself. And things like that. And people got really excited that this might be the precursor to a leadership election, because what they need to do is they need to get 48 letters calling for a leadership election into the chairman of the Conservative Party, and then there has to be one. But then afterwards, Rees-Mogg piped up himself and said, no, you know what, it's not a rebellion. We're just contributing, we're just criticising. He said, his exact words were, even Jesus had disciples who were disgruntled, which he probably meant to be reassuring. But, you know, you think, I mean, they did kind of nail Jesus to a cross a bit, didn't they? And then I got thinking, well, how far does this go? Like, who's Judas here? And who's the cock who has to crow three times? And I thought, surely Boris Johnson is a cock. But the fact is, there's not going to be a leadership election, I don't think. And the reason for that is, although these Tory rebels don't like what Theresa May is doing over Brexit with the Chequers deal, they have, like, no idea what they'd do instead. They said they were launching their proposals for a lot of this stuff, particularly for the Irish border. And everybody was quite excited to see what their proposals were. But Owen Paterson, who was one of this group and the former Northern Ireland secretary, said beforehand, there's nothing new in here, it's actually quite boring. So no one was that excited after that. And in a nutshell, they're sticking with Theresa May because 2 years after a referendum, although they don't like what she's saying, they have no idea what they do instead.
Right.
So we're all screwed.
Great. It's always good to know everything's in a good state, isn't it? Theresa May... the plot to bring her down. What do you think, Jane?
I mean, I've never seen anyone cling to power in quite the same way as Theresa May is currently doing. She's like a germ, isn't she, in a toilet bowl. That, you know when you get the bleach and you're just putting it into the toilet and you're scrubbing and scrubbing and it doesn't move? She's like that 1% that Domestos can't get rid of.
Isn't the problem that if Theresa May goes, what are you left with?
The Tory party don't seem to realise that she is actually the best person for the job. That is the tragedy.
They don't care, do they? Boris is all sort of, oh, let me take over. I don't know what I'm going to do, something or other. I'll be there on a Monday or something and I might have to come back on a Wednesday and I've got some carrots in the fridge or something like that, but that's sort of do it. And then exactly as Hugo says, well, what are you going to do about if you're going to do something? I don't know, and have a plan. And then wasn't it the Ireland thing, which I don't understand at all? They said, well, we're going to have the border 5 miles away from the border. That then becomes the border. Oh, yep, you've spotted the floor. Never mind, she's got to go and we'll take over. Whereas, I actually think Labour's policy, I really like Labour Party's policy on Europe, because I think it chimes in with the country. Because the Labour Party policy on Europe is... Complicated, isn't it? Right.
Well, Jade, what do you think of all this shenanigans with the Tory party?
Well, the only thing I thought was I saw the word plot, a plot to overthrow her, and it's not really the gunpowder plot, is it? It's not secret. It's almost like they've put a passive-aggressive note on a big fridge that everyone else can read to try and get rid of her. She knows no one likes her. She doesn't care.
I felt very sorry for Theresa May dancing on television, because it's not easy, right? And everyone was having a go at her, and I was like, you try and cha-cha in South Africa, or where? It's difficult, isn't it?
You're very rhythmical, though, Susan Calman.
Thanks very much.
She is not. She looks like she's having a fit.
How you dance meant to be a reflection of what you're like in the bedroom?
It's like when I started doing all that, Hugo, you can, and Susan, we do something called Scottish social dancing, Scottish country dancing.
I wondered where you were going with
that. Which is specifically designed to prevent sexual interaction. That's the point. I mean, you might take your cardigan off if it gets a bit warm, but that's all. So I was faced with, and maybe I'm not good. Anyway, so great. This is the news of an alleged plot to oust Theresa May, with sources saying that around 50 Conservative MPs of the European Research Group, or ERG, met this week to discuss a way to remove the Prime Minister. The ERG is not to be confused with an ECG, which of course requires someone with a heart to be present. In order to actually get rid of Theresa May, Conservative MPs need 158 votes, or they need to watch BBC One's Bodyguard with a notepad and pen. Have you seen it? It's amazing. What's in the briefcase? I can't hold my water. It's amazing. Oh, and it's a bit sexy. So, Chairman of the ERG, Jacob Rees-Mogg, says he still supports Theresa May and thinks she's a fantastic former Prime Minister. Also this week at PMQs, Jeremy Corbyn wore a wheat lapel badge in support of Britain's farming industry. Although standing in front of Theresa May with wheat pinned to your chest is very much like waving a red rag at a bull. 2 points to Hugo. Jade, who can't wait for the weekend?
Oh, this is the trade union Congress who are saying that we could eventually have a four-day week, and saying that this might be possible because of certain robotic advances that we're all taking. I suppose what I thought about this was, it depends what type of job you're wanting to have a four... Like, if you have a job which is like, of course, if you're a masseuse and you're massaging old fat men, then yes, a four-day week would be in your advantage. I met a vegan taxidermist recently. It was just a girl at a comedy gig. I asked her what her job was, and she really proudly went, "I'm a vegan." And I went, "That's not your job, because that's what vegans are like." She went, "No, I'm a vegan taxidermist." And I said, "I think you've shot yourself in your own foot." The other thing I was thought of is there are like comedians on this table, and we're all shocked that there were actually 4 days in the week.
Yeah.
Because we just thought there were just two nights and two evenings. I didn't know that there was the rest of the week.
No, there are. Sometimes there are things like bank holidays. There are extraordinary things that as comedians, there's daylight as well, which I've never seen.
They're trying to replace us with robots. Now, I've got one of those things that cleans your carpet when you're not in the house. Now, mine steals money from me. Mine had at least 30 quid in it recently. That I shouldn't really be throwing money out of my pocket, but sometimes it just comes... I don't take a wallet, I'm really unorganised, but I came home and it was full of my own money. I think this is the start of something really scary. So I think, like what Elon Musk said, I think we all need to hold off on this robotic thing and just chill out and stop being lazy. That's what I think about that.
Does your Hoover go down clubbing with other Hoovers? That have been stealing? Look what I took off my owner. I've no idea how they talk.
That, it happens to me, because as soon as I step through the front door, I take my trousers off, because I feel...
Just your own front door?
Just my front door. I feel constrained by trousers. I don't like having hot legs. And,
well, unfortunately,
you can't
Susan.
See what's underneath this table, can you?
I'm definitely wearing trousers.
Unfortunately, we all know you have hot legs. We saw it on telly.
So you take them off and then your change goes everywhere and then you can't be bothered picking it up and so there's money everywhere. So anyway, what do you think? 4 days?
I love the idea of a four-day week. I think that sounds great. I don't know how it's going to impact on someone that's self-employed, like myself. You know, I mean, I don't really understand how I'm going to get paid if I don't turn up, you know, like tonight. I mean, I'm not, you know, Miles Jupp.
Extra point to Jane.
What upset me about this was they were saying look, their plan is for the four-day week. And they're saying by the end of the century, we could be working a four-day week. And it's like, by the end of the century, I'm going to be 113. I better be bloody working a four-day week, at most.
I just think, I don't know, Mark, it sounds nice, but is the reality that people could earn enough money and talk about robotics, is this a possibility?
Well, it depends what sort of job you do. Obviously, you shouldn't have to do really boring in call centres and things. I remember one of this sort of, I did used to do this in an office, and I'd think, oh, God, right, I'm going to look at the clock again. Please let it be 5 to 1. Please let it be 5 to 1. Then I've only got 5 minutes to lunch. Oh, I can use one of them 5 minutes going to the toilet. Oh, please don't let it be 1/4 to 1. I won't survive 1/4 of an hour. Please. Right, here we go. I'm going to look at the clock. Here goes. 9:10. I think if you're in a job like that,
yeah,
even a two-day week is probably...
This is the claim from TUC's General Secretary, Francis O'Grady, that if businesses are forced to share the benefits of new technology with their workforce, then a four-day working week may be possible this century. The TUC has called on the government to take action to help people work less but get paid the same, which until now has just been called being a man. According to the TUC, 1.4 million people now work a full 7 days a week in the UK. Judging by my TV, about half of them are Keely Hawes. And quite rightly, she's a national treasure. Everybody stand. 2 points to Jade. Jen, why are many policemen not laughing?
Okay, so this story is about the fact that the government, having disregarded all of the research from a particular white paper, are not giving the police a 3% pay rise, which I think is weird for a party that sort of sold themselves on law and order. You have to wonder if they actually meant the TV show Law and Order, not actually the nuts and bolts of policing. Cressida Dick, the chief of police... I'm sorry, but that is funny. If you don't find Cressida Dick funny, there's something wrong with you. She said that the increase of 2% was a punch in the nose, to which Sajid Javid replied, "No, Your Honour, she hit her nose on the van."
What do we think? Should we not be giving the police a pay rise?
Well, they said... So they're giving them 2%, and Cressida Dick said, "This feels like 1% to our officers," which I thought was just this immensely troubling statement that it is 2%, but to the officers it feels like 1%. And I was thinking, I'm not sure maths should be something you do by feeling. Is it like when you felt it really was the Birmingham Six? Is that what's happening? But I thought when I was thinking about this as well, it's weird how that's changed, because like once that would have been like a lefty joke to mock the police, whereas now... You know, everything shifted. You had, in the last election, you had Jeremy Corbyn arguing passionately against police cuts, that the police should have more money, and the Tories trying to take money from the police. And everything's kind of sort of backwards. It used to be the police were the kind of, you know, the soldiers in the sort of the vanguard of the establishment, you know, and now they're the foot soldiers of the revolution. You used to be able to mock them as the oppressor, and now you pay them at the weekend to paint your fence. It's like, you know, the world, it's all just changed enormously.
No, it's very odd, yeah. 30 years ago, if someone was on a demonstration, they'd be shouting Thatcher's boot boys at the cops. And now on a demonstration, the cops would be saying to the demonstrators, "Go on, chuck a brick." "Go on, what's the matter with you? Call that a demonstration. Hit me."
This is the story that the government will be awarding police a 2% pay rise instead of the recommended 3%. The move was criticised by Metropolitan Police Chief Cressida Dick, who's gone through her whole life with that name. So you know that girlfriend's someone you don't want to mess with, right? Okay. The relatively low pay makes it hard to retain officers, some of whom are forced to use stop and search measures just to see if anybody has any spare change. At least the police funding crisis finally explains why Luther is always wearing the same clothes. Now, I don't know about you, but that annoys the hell out of me, because he's obviously a detective inspector or something. He earns at least £40,000 to £45,000 a year, and he only has one jacket. And I don't know why I'm saying this on Radio 4, but it really upsets me, and sometimes I shout and throw things at the television, and that is my want. I pay my TV licence. 2 points to Jen. And at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Jade have 4 points, and Jen and Mark have 5 points. We start round two with an online review of a taxidermy course.
I always wanted to do taxidermy, and I have never encountered a teacher as talented and patient as Suzette. Mounting a guinea pig was one of the most fulfilling experiences. I've ever had.
Thanks to Ian Baker Hellings in Pembrokeshire for sending us that. Hugo, have a listen to this. Hugo, whose concerns about lateness are virgin on the ridiculous?
Richard Branson. Richard Branson said on Twitter that his pet hate was people turning up late, which Twitter did not take well. You know, and loads of people sort of basically came at him saying, you know, your trains are always late, your aeroplanes are always late, because like 15 to 20% of Virgin trains are late. Don't know what flights are late, but I'm sure some are. And people saying, how dare you say you're cross when people turn up late when it's always your fault that people turn up late. And I was thinking about this, and I was reading about it, and I was reading about the trains and the planes. Then I remembered Virgin Galactic. Do you remember Virgin Galactic? Mm. It's his kind of his space travel company. And I thought, I wonder how that's doing and whether that's often late. And so I looked it up, and it said Virgin Galactic is quite late. Virgin Galactic, it started in about 2004. And in 2008, he said it would take another 18 months before they got into space. And then in 2009, he said it would take another 2 years. And then 2 years later, he said it would be another 18 months. And after 18 months, he said it would be the end of 2013. And at the end of 2013, it was said it would be sometime in 2014. And in 2014, he said it would be in 2015. And the last time anyone quoted him, he said it would be at the end of 2017. Mm. And it's kind of like waiting for a broadband engineer. And it's just... And you wonder how he kind of, like, tweeted that he hated so much when people were late with all this kind of going on. And I wondered if someone was doing it because they hated him in his name.
Possibly. I mean, I think it was posted without a sense of irony. That's the problem. I don't think he realised when he posted it that people would go, what?
It was really strange.
It's not often, you know, he's a billionaire. He's not really sitting around thinking about what's correct and what's right. If you look at all the children's tales of people that have lots of money in them, they're normally doing something that everyone frowns at. So I'm not surprised that he has absolutely no grasp of reality whatsoever. He's Richard Branson. He's a billionaire. He's taking everyone's money.
Yeah.
I've actually been in an ongoing argument with Virgin Trains, because not only are they always late, but I think the staff are too overfamiliar. They talk too loud. I just think that they, like, don't care that you're sat there. And, like, I'm not a small person. Like, when I walk down the carriage of a train, I'm able to make all the armrests go down without using my hands. So that means when I'm sat on the end sometimes, like, they bash into you and they talk at you like you've been best friends for years. And I don't know about you, but when I get on the train, I want to, like, do anything but talk to people that are working on trains. And they just have no grasp of what the public need. Now, I've recently...
Their toilets are too overfamiliar.
The toilets are ridiculous. Like, why do we need to be, like, spoken to whilst we're taking a poo? See what they had on the way to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival? They put comedians on the train to do jokes at people when they're on the train, but the only people travelling to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival
were
other comedians who don't want to listen to other people's jokes.
I'm just staggered at the lack of self-serve. I'll take Jade's point, but even so, it's almost like a child. It's almost sort of endearing, like if a little child, little toddler, said, I like being clean at the same time as they're covered in mud. Mm. It's like that. You'd want to tweak his little beard and go, listen to him saying that the thing he doesn't like is late, when 80% of the lateness that takes place in this country is happening because people have been stuck for 2 hours outside Stafford. That is what it's like. It's the lack of self-awareness, as if a spokesperson from ISIS said, the one thing I cannot stand is when someone cancels meeting because they are taken hostage in basement.
The Mrs. Richard Branson, who faced an online backlash after posting online that there's little that annoys me in life, but people turning up late really does, and being immediately reminded that he runs Virgin Rail. The entrepreneur and adventurer Richard Branson has worked tirelessly for decades in order to ensure that hot air ballooning is now only seen as the second most ludicrous way to travel, right behind using one of his bastard trains. 2 points to Hugo. Jade, who's taking the harissa?
That's good. Waitrose has recently been mocked for providing a list of essentials for the student of this year, and the list is ridiculous. So they basically have things like harissa, organic soy sauce, marigolds, Swiss vegetables, bouillon and powder. I mean, 99% of students haven't even bought four of those words, and they'll do the fifth whenever their loan comes in, to be honest with you. Powder, I mean cocaine. Radio 4. They describe it as a starter kit for those about to fly the nest. I've got a very quick question. How big's the nest and when can I move in? I went to the University of Glamorgan. I know where. I went because it was up a hill and I thought I could lose weight if I lived up a hill. Turns out taxis are quite cheap in Treforest. Never walked up that hill once. But there were a lot of things I would have needed better advice at university. I mean, the things that you want in your supermarket are things like, you know, like your checklist, or things like pasta and pasta sauces and more pasta and then some rice and then some more pasta, because essentially that's all you're going to be putting into your bodies. But I think if you had like a progressive supermarket, and I really hope that Asda are like this, but I don't think they are. I worked at Asda. My mum still does. I got sacked for eating a prawn wonton off the counter. True story. But I hope Asda, like, you know, look at this and then do their own more progressive list of essentials, like things that you really need to learn as a student that I don't think they teach you, like tax and politics advice. You know, kids, you say the words tax, they don't know about it, and, you know, they don't really feel that politically engaged unless it comes up on their phone and it's Jeremy Corbyn at Glastonbury doing a victory lap to a bunch of people that didn't vote for him because they were at Glastonbury. But advice like, you may not be politically engaged, kids, but at some stage your tax bracket will move and you will start thinking things like, do we need ambulances? But that would be a more helpful list. But Waitrose obviously think they know their audience, but I don't think Waitrose really understand.
There are a few things about this story that made me quite upset. The first one is, I recently went to Waitrose for the first time. We went on a wee day trip. Because we'd heard there was one near us, and we'd never really had the courage to go, but we went.
Your supermarket of choice normally?
If I'm getting a home delivery, it's usually Tesco, but I go to a Morrison's on a daily basis.
Oh, nice, I like it.
Yeah, it's good. I like to keep it, absolutely. Yeah. Well, listen, you know, I don't want to talk about how real I am, but I'm, you know, pretty real, so... I found it quite intimidating because it's you know, an essential is not harissa paste.
What
is it?
Who has ever been in their kitchen and gone, oh, dinner's off, we've run out of harissa paste again? I mean, I don't... Does anyone even know what harissa paste...
It
sounds like, I don't know, Cressida Dick's best friend. I don't know.
I used harissa because I was on a big kick. I was trying to... I was diagnosed with certain food intolerances recently. One of them's cabbage, which is actually quite difficult because I do enjoy cabbage. I love cabbage.
How did you figure that out? You tried a bit of everything.
And no, I went to cabbage, one of those places where they test you. They test you.
With cabbage?
No. It's like Scientology. You hold a rod and they put a thing in your thing and a guy says it's
cabbage.
Sorry,
no. What? You're in a room.
Yeah, I went to a room and I paid...
And there's like an egg and a cabbage.
No, I paid a man £75 and held a rod. Oh, hang on a second. No, anyway, I'm intolerant. And I was trying to cook differently, so I went and got like harissa paste and stuff like that to try and, you know, jazz things up a little bit. But when I was a student, I used to put all my change in a sock.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying, as a student, I used to put all my money in a sock because I only had change, and then you would go to the corner shop and you would put out the sock exactly for whatever it was you needed, and it was usually... I used to survive on chips and cream because I thought I was Belgian. My point is, do students need this?
I'll tell you what it does remind... This is a serious point. What it does remind me of is someone I know who went to the doctor's and he said, I've got a lettuce stuck up my arse. And the doctor had a feel about it and he says, I've got bad news, that's only the tip of the iceberg. I'd love to do that all the time instead of jokes about Jacob Rees-Mogg.
So, what do we think? Waitrose essentials.
I just think it was really different when we were... Well, like, when I was a student, it was a badge of honour to cook the most disgusting meal you possibly could. I mean, if you didn't have scurvy by the end of the first term, you were doing something wrong. I mean, it wasn't unusual, was it? You know, like, I remember some bloke put in a can of Campbell's mushroom soup and a pot noodle and called it carbonara, and we were like, yeah, that sounds great.
I lived with a really passive-aggressive blind woman in my halls of residence. They're allowed to be passive-aggressive as well. She was awful. She was so horrible. And the blind bit, there'll be a point to it in a second. But she was awful. Like, there was no space in the fridge. There were 12 of her shoes in one fridge, right? And she had a dog, and I was allergic to dogs. And... I can't tell you how small the space was that I had for my stuff. And then every day she'd be in the kitchen and she'd tell me that you've taken up too much room. I know what stuff is yours because the other... And she'd been, like, around everyone. So I knew that she kept her cans in a certain order in her cupboards. So I switched around her baked beans and her Campbell's tomato soup. And so she had baked bean soup one day. And that was me.
Oh, this is brilliant. Come out to do a quiz about the news in the middle of one of the most turbulent times in the history of British politics. And the discussions have been Susan being allergic to cabbage, a passive-aggressive blind woman, and someone who mounts guinea pigs.
Yeah. Do you know what, Mark? Do you know what? Every day
brilliant.
I wake up and it's a relentless pile of rubbish, and this is the kind of thing that will keep the country going.
Exactly.
We should be on bloody prescription, quite frankly, the news quiz. We should be on bloody prescription. From all of you so far is,
oh, we don't know what the solution is. Nothing's going to happen. We're all going to die.
So what if I take my trousers off because I get hot legs? So what if she moved around a passive-aggressive blind woman's cans? She's a hero in some quarters. People at home will either be thinking, what a cow, or I would have done the same thing. And that's the joy of the news quiz. Diversity. Welcome. Anyway. This is Waitrose who...
Sorry, sorry. What happens to you when you eat cabbage?
This is Waitrose who raised eyebrows this week when they published a list of essential food items for students that included rose harissa paste, organic cider vinegar and Swiss vegetable bouillon powder. The products which Waitrose deems to be essential has long been the subject of scepticism. Their essential range includes artichoke hearts, coarse liver patty and brioche. I know what they mean when they say essential. I can't tell you the panic I felt last time I ran out of patty. I vaulted the park fence and tried to lick a goose. I say let students eat nice food now, as they sure as hell won't be able to when they graduate into a post-Brexit employment Hunger Games where they can only feed on weaker candidates. Students were confused why the list of ingredients was so expensive, as they were led to believe that their Freshers' Week pack contained free condiments. 2 points to Jade. Jen, why has there been a racket at the US Open?
Yes, this is the story of the umpire strikes back. It's the story of Serena Williams and the US Open final where the umpire has been criticised for his behaviour towards her. I think the issue here was the inconsistency in terms of how umpires rule on the tennis court. And the feeling was that Serena Williams was treated differently to, say, how Djokovic had been treated earlier on in that very same tournament. And I think there was a sort of an inconsistency of how players are penalised by umpires. And I get that because in terms of disciplining, I'm quite inconsistent with my children, actually. Because, you know, one day I'll let them watch 4 hours of CBeebies and the next day I'll be smashing their iPads against an expensive piece of antique furniture I picked up from a thrift shop in Notting Hill.
She was being direct. And that's something that women, I would say, over my life, my mum's especially someone that's not struggled with it, but learning to not be passive-aggressive and not go around the back of the person that's upset you, to be able to stand in front of the person that's upset you and say, you are doing something that I don't like you doing, and not to get angry and not to be hysterical, but literally learn how to be direct. And I think that is what she was doing in that situation. And I think that's very important in today's society, is to learn how to be direct without needing anyone else's approval behind
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. I think that's right. And I think... I mean, when I have to complain, I just turn into my mother now, because she's very direct. I was at the Fringe, and I was trying to pick up a card for something like that, and there was a young man in the box office, and he was picking his nose. And I said, "And do you have the card?" And he shrugged. And it was just a gut thing. I went, "There's no need to shrug at me, young man." And I thought, oh, God. So whenever I have to stand up for myself, I just channel my primary school teacher mother, and it comes out just the right tone of voice.
I was looking back at some of the McEnroe footage, because I remember when I was a kid, he used to sort of lose it on a regular basis. It's funny, he was treated much the same, but behaving far worse. It's amazing how he used to behave on tennis courts. He was sort of shrieking and shouting. And you can watch it all on YouTube. It's this sort of constant stream of meltdown. So what I don't understand about people when they do this is, like, I've never seen the game... Either a tennis match or a football match where someone loses it and shouts at the umpire or the referee, and it works. And the referee goes, "You know what? You're right. I'll put it away. I'm sorry. Carry on."
I think that because I do watch a lot of tennis, and I've seen Djokovic. He's brilliant once. He smashed at Wimbledon, and he just smashed his racket. Boof, boof, until it split in two, and then carried on and was brilliant and won, and just nothing happened. If that was Serena. And Murray, I mean, I utterly, utterly adore Andy Murray, but he had brilliant tantrums, usually against himself. "Oh, I'm injured. Oh, I'm no good. I'm injured. Now look what I've done. My knee's gone and my back's gone, and oh, God, and now my lips hurt and my eye hurts, and it turns out that I'm a woman trapped in a man's body."
Don't you dare applaud that. Andy Murray is my future husband. Don't you dare. I will be marrying Andy Murray.
Does your wife know?
I met Judy Murray. I met her on three occasions, and the last time I met her, I plucked up the courage to say, "I hope to marry your son, and you'll be my mother-in-law." And she... look genuinely terrified. And I was just like, "Oh," I said, I was like, "Don't you think it'd be really great, like at Christmas and stuff, you know, me and you and Andy?" And she kind of went and ran away. I just think Andy Murray's just, he's sexy and he's a feminist and he's...
I'd marry him.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say I'd marry you.
I would marry you, but only if Andy Murray turned me down.
Yeah.
Wedding's off.
I've never met him. I've never met Andy Murray, and I'm glad I haven't, because I just... it's like, I think I would find it quite difficult to control myself. Like,
do you think the reason why you've not met him is that his mother's keeping you away from him?
This is the fallout from the US Open final, where Serena Williams was beaten in straight sets by Naomi Osaka, during which she was docked a game for verbal abuse, having already had a point penalty for smashing her racket and a code violation for coaching. It has been pointed out the male tennis players have traditionally got away with comparable bad behaviour. Tim Henman was known to slurp his barley water quite aggressively at times. And of course, Andre Agassi once accidentally bit the head off a live ball boy. Bursts of rage are quite common in tennis, as anyone who's seen me having to queue half an hour for an £8 glass of Prosecco can attest. And that's not actually true, because what you do is you just take the foil bit out of a wine box, right, and you sellotape it to your naked skin. Because when they do the pat-downs, they can't go under the clothes. So if it's there, they can't get you, and then you put two straws down your arms, like you're the Ghostbusters. 2 points to Jane. Mark, have a listen to this. "You saw the whole of the moon. The whole of the moon. You were there in the turnstiles with the wind at your heels. You stretched for the stars and you know how it feels to reach too high, too far, is completely over the moon.
Oh, that's very good, over the moon. He's, it was this... Oh, I can't remember his name. As an astronaut...
Frank Borman.
And he was on Apollo 8. So there we are. So only, you know, getting, three before the one that went... where they landed on the moon. And all very exciting at the time. Human beings actually going round the moon in sort of 1967, whenever it was. And he's just done an interview now, aged 90, I believe, in which he said that he actually had no interest in space. I think his exact words were, "I really couldn't stand space." Which is something a kid would say. "I don't like space. Come on, we're going to space. I hate space." So he really didn't...
He just hated it,
and that's... Which, in fact, although he's 90, he sounds like quite a modern, I think, modern kid. My son, I could imagine, now, if he said, "Oh, you've got a chance to go to the moon," he'd go, "Is Renando's." "I'm going to go up there for it. They've got Wi-Fi. I can't go to WhatsApp. I'm going to go to the moon for."
One of the strangest things about this... So this guy went into space on the Apollo 8... And it's one of the most depressing stories I've ever read, in a way, because he said when he arrived home, he didn't even talk about the experience with his wife or family, who also seemed rather indifferent to the whole space thing. The poor guy's gone to space and he's come home and everyone's like, "Aye, right."
What was the weather like, dear?
Where's he from? He sounds like he's got a Bristolian family.
would your family be similarly?
They literally don't know what I do with my life. What's that? I said to my brother recently, he's an electrician. I said to him, I was like, why don't you come and watch me do gigs? You know, it's going really well at the moment. And he said, "Well, you don't watch me do electrics, do you?"
Points to a certain extent. What do you think, Hugo? Would you be excited to go to space?
Well, I mean, there's not much there, right? It's famously empty. You know, it's kind of like when you drive across France, right? It's like if you drive from one end of France to the other end of France, it's like on one level you're in France and a lot's happened in France, but on another level there's nothing happening. You know, there's just occasionally there's like a service station where you can buy a flick knife and a beer. But, Or like do a poo in a hole. But most of the time, there's just nothing. And you're like, I'm in the sort of, you know, like the sort of the cradle of Western culture, and there's just nothing. And so I can imagine how going to space is a bit like driving across France. In a way, it's funny, it sounded like logical when I thought of it.
I mean, I would hope it was slightly more exciting. It's not that France isn't exciting. And I love your explanation on one level. Quite a lot's happened in France.
My favourite thing about the moon, though, seeing as you ask, is... the Russians, during the space race, built these special bombs for the moon. And what they are is they're these sort of metal balls that they fired at the moon that are made up of lots of tiny flags. And they hit the moon and exploded, scattering flags everywhere. And it's kind of like pretending they'd been there. Flag bombs. Amazing.
Is that true?
I think so.
Jen, moon.
Frank Borman, he sounds like a sort of a Northern Club comic from the 70s, isn't he?
"Oh, I went to the moon, it was over the moon, oh, but got there, no atmosphere, oh, smash me helmet on Uranus, hey, I'm here all week, ha-ha."
I read that he said, I wanted to go after 30 seconds and just go home. I mean, it's quite a long way to, like, go and just go, "I was bored after 30 seconds and I want to go home." He should have just joined a gym.
I just think it's, you know, if you've got to go to space... We never usually ask the newsreaders, but I want to ask you, Susan. Would you like to go to space, Susan?
No.
That's why we never ask the newsreaders anything. Thanks for joining in, Susan. This is retired astronaut Frank Borman, who took part in the first ever mission to orbit the moon in 1968, and who has this week described the experience as boring and said that he really isn't interested in space. The Borman family are notorious for finding the drudgery in unusual working environments. Frank's brother Alan, for instance, he was the Marquis de Sade's diary secretary for 3 years and said, in the end, it was just another admin job. Having been part of the first manned spacecraft to safely orbit the moon and return home, Borman said he was unmoved by the whole experience and found space to be a black, featureless void before someone pointed out he had his helmet on backwards. 2 points to Mark. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Mark.
Well, this comes from Rosie Hunter, who saw this description of a laptop for sale on eBay. This computer has no hard drive and the on-off switch is stuck. Otherwise, it's in perfect working condition.
Jen.
This is from Ed Saddington, who saw this notice in the kitchen of his Hampshire church. Please rinse teapots after use, then stand upside down in the sink.
Hugo.
Nick Partington sent this in and he heard it on a Radio 5 news report. A couple from London have toasted the birth of their second child using 19-year-old defrosted sperm.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Jade have 8 points, but this week's winners are Jen and Mark with 9 points. Before we leave you, here's an extract from the front page of a local parish magazine sent in by Henry Garthwaite.
In this issue, we bring the news that Canon Mackenzie is to retire, and the hymn of the month is Give Me Joy in My Heart.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz extra were Hugo Rifkind, Jade Adams, Jen Brister and Mark Steele. In the chair was Susan Kalman and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair's script was written by Clint Edwards, John Hunter and Sarah Morgan, with additional material by Sarah Gibbs and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Beverly Tagg and it was a BBC Studios production.